Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the Corlin Economics Report. We really probably, Jimmy, ought to change this to the Corlin Political Report because we're basically talking about politics the whole time. But I want you guys out there to know that the reason we do that is politics are very, very influential in terms of the financial situation in America and also around the world. We're going to start out the show today. We're going to talk about crime in America, and we're going to start with San Francisco, where they are now using robots for police officers on occasion. Jimmy, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so apparently the San Francisco Police Department has went ahead and bought a number, apparently seven military-grade robots. Yeah. I'm sorry, 17 remotely piloted robots. 12 of them work right now, but these have weapons on them. So they're basically, you know, can use deadly force. And of course, what is
Shades of RoboCop, the movie.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's
kind
of scary.
It's kind of funny, you know, not funny, but it is frightening that we've got this evolution in domestic police where they have what was a movie back that almost, you know, a sci-fi, surreal sci-fi of Detroit back in the 80s. This the entire idea of RoboCop, where a law enforcement officer is wounded in a or basically killed, but they bring him back and use his parts in order to become a robot law enforcement officer.
Right.
And what is more interesting than that, which is the sci-fi piece of it, is how bad things have gotten in Detroit in that movie. And a lot of people thought it was just sci-fi. But the reality is, when in some areas in Detroit, in some areas in Chicago, in some areas in New York, some areas in San Francisco, certainly in L.A., those sci-fi reality, you know, visionaries are showing the reality of today. I mean, you have these mass groups coming in and doing, you know, just robbing stores, shoplifting on a massive scale. You've got violence and murder in the streets. I mean, in Chicago, you know, every weekend they have a large number of shootings and deaths. And some of these things are absolutely unreal. The robberies, what's happening in New York City on the subway, you know, 40% of the population has stopped using the subway in New York City. Even news reporters say, hey, I won't even get on it anymore. I mean, mainstream news reporters are saying it to people like Kathy Hochul. They're saying, you know, to the governor there, they're saying, look, we don't even, you know, we don't feel safe in the city. However, you know, what we've got is the cops being alienated and then called, you know, fascists. Well, and then they can't police. So what do? They end up buying robots. And in San Francisco, I think, you know, it's kind of a very bizarre twist when they really don't support law enforcement, when the prosecutors there are allowing numerous people to go free, and these people go free on small things, and they end up doing big things. And it's very damaging to the society. It's damaging to the individuals. It's certainly breaking down, you know, any trust in, you know, law enforcement in the community. And something like this really doesn't help. But at the same time, I understand the cops are scared to death to get involved in these situations because, you know, they're not supported.
No, and not a bit.
So how, in a standoff or something like that, a robot that's controlled by a police officer may save a cop's life.
So, you know, Jim, I just want to throw in one thing here. It's very, very surreal that the day after Thanksgiving 2022, we have gotten to this point in America. I just almost don't believe it, Jim.
It's hard to believe on one hand. On the other hand, we've been watching the
progression. We've been watching the progression,
Yeah, and we've been watching it. We've been actually warning people about it for a long time.
Yeah, we have been.
But there's a disconnect, and I think a lot of people that live inside those urban areas, they're very isolated from others, right? And they depend on all the infrastructure they see. So they demand, they believe more in, that government is the solution. At the same time, they're frustrated, certainly with law enforcement, And if you've got a small group of people that have been very effective in communicating this anti-police rhetoric, and then the biggest problem is the media and a lot of, you know, well-funded operations that reinforce those ideologies. And what they're doing is they're undermining confidence in our system. And I think it's for a bigger purpose. My opinion, it is to undermine stability in the United States. This is the George Soros-funded prosecutor effort. This is the big corporate entities that are trying to basically bring the United States down to a level equivalent to other countries in the world because they don't believe in our basic rights, but more importantly, because those basic rights are a threat to corporate control and authoritarian control and basically communism.
Yeah,
socialism,
Jim, and communism. Jim, let me ask you a question. We've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years now, and we talk about what, you know, so-and-so is trying to do to take over the country, to demean the country to the point where it's almost non-functional. I would have to say that so-and-so has succeeded up to this point.
Yeah, I would argue that there's been a tremendous amount of success, unfortunately, because many, many people have needlessly been hurt in a lot of this violence. Numerous small businesses and shops have been robbed.
You bet.
You know, and it's it. We were on a, really for the last 20, prior to the COVID outbreak, really up until 2020, the United States, since the mid-90s, major violent crime and small crime had been declining.
Yeah.
And that was the result of more incarceration for people doing small things. And what, you know, Rudy Giuliani did as mayor of New York, where, hey, you know, the broken windows policy, if someone breaks a window, you arrest them because they're the one that's likely to step up and have a bigger problem later.
Yeah.
Now that's completely been reversed, where the prosecutors allow this small stuff to go, and then all of a sudden these people that did a lot of small stuff end up doing something, you know, killing someone or attacking someone, and
well,
there's no retribution.
Yeah, well, it's a known fact that Mr. Giuliani Esquire did really clean up New York City. You know, I was in New York speaking at an investment conference towards the end of his tenure, and it was interesting, you know, my daughter and I walked all over the city late at night. We had absolutely no problem. Got back to the hotel. I was talking to some of the people in the hotel about our walk. It was really a very long walk throughout Manhattan, starting in Times Square, and we're just going all over. Nobody on the streets, no problem whatsoever. The people at the hotel said that was amazing, but just a couple of years ago, you could not literally have done that. And so he really, really cleaned up the city. And I guess my question here, Jimmy, is so why did it have to go back to where it was? I'm going to give you the final word, Jim. We're at 8:22.
Yeah, so I it went back that way because people just got complacent. And they didn't realize what it takes and actually to hold people accountable. And then the politics have basically separated and created this impact on communities and individuals through both COVID lockdowns and numerous, you know, pushes through the George Floyd issues, the riots, where we really have undermined faith in each other, and people are absolutely afraid to identify what they feel or believe, and then the media compounds that by silencing people's voices, and the tech companies do the same. So it's a very, very bizarre situation with censorship.
It's a bizarre situation, Jim. We got to cut for a break, but we're going to start the next segment talking exactly about this subject. Stick around, you guys.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
And like, you know, in the last segment we were talking about violence in the cities of the United States. You know, I noticed there's very little violence in the Midwest. People there seem to be kind of taking the violence into their own hands, as they did in a suburb of Seattle during the lockdown in Seattle, which I'm really kind of glad to see. The one thing I want to say, you know, is I have a friend who is a practicing psychiatrist with Kaiser here in the Northwest, and I was just chatting with her last Wednesday, and I asked her how her bookings were going. And she said, you know, if somebody wanted to get in for an appointment right now, they'd have almost a two-month wait. And I said, you've got to be kidding. And she said, no, we're absolutely jammed. And my question was, why? I mean, is that normal? And she said, no, it's not normal. But she said, I'm attributing that totally to the problems that were associated with COVID a while ago. And I said, you've got to be kidding. And she said, no, absolutely true. People are getting very, very frustrated in America. And as I said during the last segment, whoever is trying to beat down America and make it weaker is doing a very, very admirable job, I have to say. I'm very, very sorry that I have to say that, but they seem to be succeeding. So everything that Irish Tony and Out of the Box Jerry and Avalon and everything that people are saying is really coming true in America, and that makes me sad. Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about the voting results in Arizona, specifically in Maricopa County, because it kind of goes along with what we're talking about right now.
Sure. There's a there's a huge psychological impact of COVID, and I think it's being reflected in the demeanor of individuals and their voting patterns. And then as well, you're seeing a continuation of what happened in 2020,
yeah,
with the COVID lockdowns and the changes in a lot of voting laws that allowed for mail-in voting and that actually encouraged and almost inspired people to be out doing vote harvesting and manipulating people out of fear in order to achieve political ends. And there's no better case to show that than Maricopa County right now in Arizona. So, you know, we do have Katie Hobbs, who was the Secretary of State, who was responsible for the election.
You mean the woman running for governor?
the woman running for governor,
yeah,
was responsible
amazing
for the election.
Yeah.
And you have this absolutely disastrous problem in Maricopa County,
yeah,
where the voting machines, the tabulators, stopped working on election day. On election day, which typically most conservatives do not mail in their ballots. So basically, by 25 to 30% of the voting machines around the Maricopa County, in many of them in specific areas that were more conservative than others, the voting machines didn't work. People would stand in line for a long time. Basically, it was the tabulators that were supposed,
yeah,
to count the ballots. Then they said, oh, if it doesn't work, go ahead and just put your ballot into what they call the third drawer. And then, of course, don't trust us, it'll work. And we'll count it.
What a coincidence, huh?
There is an unbelievable, you know, most polls show Carrie Lake at least 3 to 5 points,
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't think there was any that actually showed, Katie Hobbs, who did not campaign, who,
yeah,
basically stayed, you know, had no support, very small turnout for most of her events, and had a lot of problems during her campaign, but somehow,
yeah,
Democrats on election day only showed up by 17%. Republicans showed up by 70%, but somehow Katie Hobbs comes out on top with all these things happening. And of course that had a huge impact on the Senate race with Blake Masters,
yeah,
as well as some of the other races, smaller races around the state. Now, what's very interesting is that if you look at the ballot tallies for Republicans into the conservative areas, they were much higher. And it doesn't make sense that they would split the ticket for local congressional districts and then vote Democrat on the top of the ticket. That doesn't make much sense. So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered with what happened in Arizona. And here's the worst part about it. They were subpoenaed by the court in Maricopa County to hand over election records by 9 o'clock on Monday morning. They changed their supervisor's meeting to certify the election from, I believe it was from 9:30 to 8 o'clock in the morning, somewhere around that time. They basically moved their certification an hour before the court required subpoena to hand over election records. So they're attempting, there's some weird things that are happening there in Arizona. And I think this frustration for half the country, along with what happened in the George Floyd riots, where people were rioting and burning down cities, the lack of governance that allowed that to continue, and then the lockdowns in COVID is stressing people out, and you're having a huge impact, a mental impact on our society over these issues. And I think it comes right back to, hey, if you can't vote them out, you don't trust the system, what the heck is going on? And that's where I think we're facing a very serious future if this continues down the road without transparency, without opening the books, without actually convincing people through facts where things stand. And right now, you got the media silencing people, tech companies silencing people on questioning these vote outcomes.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question right now. I mean, you get around a lot. You know, you're very active in the party, and you travel quite a bit on behalf of the party, et cetera, et cetera. How much faith, true faith, do you think exists among American voters today based on your experience?
I think many, many people are really just disenchanted with the system, very frustrated. And I've seen it all over. I've seen it in Washington, D.C. I've seen it, you know, certainly here in South Carolina, out in Washington State.
Yeah.
You know, in Colorado, there is a huge number of people that just don't trust the system anymore. And you know what? They don't care. They stop voting. That's very apparent in California. Conservatives, they keep their mouth shut because they're afraid to be alienated and attacked by their neighbors and friends and the press, you know, or at least just, you know, embarrassed. So, and they realize, hey, it's a waste of time. Why even bother? So they don't get out. They don't vote. And because they just don't trust it. And of course, it's being proven that it's somewhat of a facade when you can't question these elections and no one's going to step forward in power in these Democratic blue states and allow thorough investigation. And in some conservative states as well.
Yeah, in some conservative states, that's actually happening. Jimmy, we're up to about 8 minutes here. We got to take a break for the top of the hour news at 8:15. So let me just say one thing. What I would like to concentrate on in terms of our daily editorials for this coming week between now and, you know, early December, I'd like to talk about what's going on with the psychology of the average everyday American. We'll be right back. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Got some interesting things in the news. Eric Schmidt, who is the Attorney General of Missouri, and his entire office has deposed the federal government in terms of attempting to sway people's opinions on what's going on with COVID. One of the people who was included in that deposition was Anthony Fauci. Jim, you want to give us an overview on that?
Yeah, so Anthony Fauci was required. The federal government attempted to suppress subpoenas and depositions from federal officers in this lawsuit. The state of Missouri is suing the federal government over censorship and the government getting involved in First Amendment rights, taking away rights, by influencing tech, social media, and media organizations in order to silence them over questions on the COVID response and where the origins of the COVID virus came from.
Yeah.
So initially the government said, we don't want these people to be deposed.
Yeah.
The judges actually agreed with the state of Missouri, the Attorney General, Eric Schmidt, and his office, and has now forced deposition. On Wednesday, Anthony Fauci was required to give a 7-hour deposition on his involvement in contact with tech companies, tech leaders, in particular, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're in the government's attempts to force these tech companies or influence these tech companies as well as media organizations into pushing back on narratives that they believed were inaccurate. Now, what we're seeing is that much of the information that they pushed back on was actually turned out to be true.
I'll bet you, Jimmy, the public will never see what their answers were.
Well, I think in court they'll be forced to. Right now, apparently, Fauci's deposition was sealed, so we won't know exactly what came out of it.
Yeah.
And of course, Jen Psaki, who was the White House spokesperson,
yeah,
she's also been subpoenaed and will be required to give a deposition. The Department of Justice was fighting those depositions as well. Number of people in the National Institute of Health, the CDC, and Health and Human Services are facing the same depositions in this lawsuit. Yeah. So it'll be very, very interesting. I hope you're wrong. If in fact you are right and nothing ever comes and none of these depositions see the light of day, then once again, here is the federal government getting involved in order to silence people directly against the First Amendment and using their power and influence through the Justice Department and through all these agencies, regulatory agencies, in order to silence American citizens and to silence opposing voices on a very, very damaging event, the most damaging probably overall in human history.
Yeah, it hasn't even stopped yet. I know the lady who helps me, you know, clean my place. I talked with her this morning. She's had COVID for the last 4 days, and she never had it before. She just got it now. So it's very definitely still with us. There's no question about that. What I do have a question about, though, Jimmy, is why the silent treatment? I mean, you know, COVID, flu, a serious cold, pneumonia. We're not hearing anything at all about those, the particular attributes of those diseases vis-a-vis what's going on with COVID. Everything is quiet.
Well, so there has been, actually, Al, there has been a very big push with what they call RSV, this respiratory syndrome virus or something. And that's basically, when you look at the symptoms, it's the common cold. But they've named it, and there's a lot of complaints about, you know, young people getting it. It turns out, from many of the experts, they believe that, in fact, many children over the last two years were so restricted and isolated that they weren't exposed to some of these normal viruses, and this is having a bigger impact on them. And they weren't exposed to them because of all the lockdowns, because of the masking, and at least this is the argument that's out there by some experts.
Well, take
it.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, I was going to say, it looks more to me like, once again, the health officials and really the very unfortunately money-grabbing health industry is pushing these agendas in order to achieve more government funding or support, and maybe not looking very thoroughly at the science. And that's what I'm afraid of has happened completely with COVID. They're ignoring evidence that would go against their narrative. Their narrative actually supports them politically and financially with COVID, with the pharmaceutical industry, with the health industry. And that's what they're afraid of. And that's why they're silencing people.
You know, Jimmy, the thought that I had at Thanksgiving dinner looking at my grandsons a couple of days ago is you really have to wonder what all these lockdowns, the effect that they're going to have on the immune systems of children and older people who take part in the lockdowns when it comes to other serious diseases? I mean, yeah, they're locked down from COVID, but what about other really serious diseases?
Well, there's look, we know right now that there was a really big rise in many, many diseases that may be actually directly or indirectly related to the lockdowns.
Yeah.
One of the very severe problems during the lockdowns was the medical industry was restricted on, and many of the hospitals were not looking at people, were not diagnosing cancer. So cancer is spread, and there's a significant number of people dying from excess deaths from cancer, from heart disease that could be, and according to much research, could be directly related to the vaccinations, myocarditis, pericarditis.
Let me ask you this, Jimmy. We got about 4 minutes, okay? Let me ask you this about a good solid 3 minutes. How does what you just said play into the study that Jerry is doing with a rise in deaths in the United States?
Yeah, so the unfortunate reality is during COVID, everybody that had tested with any example of COVID or any indication of COVID in their system was counted as a COVID death.
Right.
The CDC has come out and said, okay, that we were mistaken with that. They've gone back. They've looked at some of those numbers. We actually don't know how many people died because of COVID and how many people died with COVID, because COVID was exceptionally and is exceptionally transmissible, very easily passed from one to another. But it also doesn't do nearly the damage that anybody expected early on. So this excess death problem is now becoming serious in the United States, according to insurance agencies, according to many medical professionals, where there are people dying from issues that may not be directly related and have nothing to do with COVID, but are indirectly related to lockdowns, with emotional, with suicide, or potentially with the vaccinations that were there in order to prevent transmission and prevent death from COVID. And it looks as though, with much information out there, that was a big fallacy. That's a big part of this lawsuit that the Attorney General in Missouri put forward, Eric Schmidt. Now, Eric Schmidt just won the Senate seat for Missouri. And what he will do, what the governor has done, Mike Parsons, he's named Andrew Bailey as the new Attorney General for the state of Missouri. Andrew Bailey is actually the Assistant Attorney General and has worked in the General Counsel for the Governor's Office. So we'll see where he goes and how much they push that. And I know we're just about out of time here, but this is very, very important.
Let me ask a real quick question. Real quick.
We should move on to the next and finish it up in the next segment, because we only have about 10 seconds.
I would like to do that in the next segment. Very important question. I'll be back with you guys in about 2 minutes. KER Politics. I want to ask Jim a question that I didn't have time to ask him at the end of the prior segment, and that is, when you look at the Missouri Attorney General, who is now a member of Congress, and his replacement, are they pretty much on our side when it comes to the arguments that we're putting forth on this program regarding COVID, Jim?
Well, certainly Eric Schmidt is, because he's the one that pushed this forward. So there's no question, and as a senator replacing somewhat of a rhino, I think this is going to be an important step, actually, to get a better voice in the Senate. But, Mr. Bailey, Andrew Bailey, the general counsel for the governor, he's a conservative. He's been a prosecuting attorney in Warren County. He was a Missouri assistant attorney general. And he was the general counsel for the Missouri Department of Corrections.
Right.
He's a vet. He's a former veteran. I tend to think that he will be continuing this. And this is such an important issue for the nation, actually holding federal officials accountable for silencing voices that probably would have benefited people had they and actually made them much more aware of what options were out there for them. But I think it's such an important event that I'm confident that the governor and that Eric Schmidt wouldn't have allowed someone that was going to undermine that objective there, because I think the governor is definitely on board as well with this. And let's pray and hope that we get to the bottom of the government censorship over information that was critical for decisions for Americans to make.
You know, a lot of people have taken up this COVID question and done some really serious studies on it. People in addition to us, and we're not letting this thing go. I wonder when it's going to come out exactly what the problem, not the problem, but what the reason that there is so much silence regarding this disease that has killed hundreds of thousands of people.
You have to ask, why was the FDA attempting to put off disclosure of the actual information on the development of Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, mRNA vaccines, for 75 years without letting people look at them? And the justification that somehow this was proprietary information for development is absolutely ridiculous. This is being forced upon American citizens, was forced upon American citizens in order for them to keep their jobs, forced upon soldiers, forced upon any federal worker in order to keep their job. And nobody actually knew what the background behind and what the science behind the information was. And we know for a fact, there is no question about this, there is no long-term study that shows the effectiveness of Pfizer or Moderna or any one of these drugs, these COVID drugs, because there was never enough time to do it. There was never enough time to do the standard processes to review these. So we do not know what the impact is. And the fact that the government is attempting to silence people and intervening in media and tech companies to ensure that they're silencing voices that may come up with other science, and actually going directly against very, very respected scientists like Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, like Peter McCullough from once at Baylor University, one of the leading heart specialists in the world. There's numerous very, very, very well-respected scientists that have come out and said, there's a problem here. And with silencing those voices by actually attacking people and using government influence to do it, we have absolutely undermined faith and confidence in these institutions.
Oh, sure.
And half the nation is just like, what the heck is going on? And the other ones freaked out because they're scared to death from the way the government's portrayed this virus.
Yeah.
It's damaging to our society. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd like to ask Jerry out of the box. You are compiling the fatality statistics in America going back quite some time now. I'd like to know what the fatality statistics are in America for the last 4 years. I really would like to see that. And you know what, Bud? I'm going to look them up.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and look back really like the maybe from 2016 through 2020 and then 2020 through now,
right,
and do a compare and contrast.
Yeah.
The problem is there was so much information that was silenced, and you know, we certainly know with the vaccine injury database, the VIRS process that the CDC had put in place, that they have seen just unbelievable numbers of negative events or adverse reactions to these vaccines, but they're not reporting on them. And they're still pushing them. You know, many European countries have made it illegal to give children the vaccines.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
And here we have the United States and the Health and Human Services and different states pushing the vaccines on children. And it absolutely looks like, to me, it looks like influence, corruption, and maybe a nefarious agenda to really undermine the United States and split us.
Well, I would sure like to see during that five-hour deposition that Anthony Fauci was involved in, I'd sure would like to read the questions and answers that he gave during that five-hour period.
Well, let's hope that this does come to light, and the way it's going to come to light, and the most important thing that happened in the last year was this midterm election, where the Republicans came away with 222 seats to 213 for the Democrats in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what that means is that the Republicans take the leadership roles in the oversight committees. Those oversight committees will have to go forward and do investigations on issues. And we've already heard that they're going to push on the, you know, Hunter Biden stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that to me is like that's a threat. Joe Biden was directly involved with Hunter Biden. There's plenty of evidence of it. That is like, okay, a warning shot. But what is more important, what I think is more important for the Republican House of Representatives to lead investigations on,
yeah,
are this silencing, this censorship of the media and censorship by the government of tech companies and influencing the tech companies. And what we've seen with Twitter and Facebook and Google silencing or shutting down searches against, you know, information that would be actually beneficial to people. If they don't do that, if the Republicans don't realize how damaging this is to the society, they will never win an election again.
Yeah.
The next thing they have to do is they have to hold very big hearings on and important hearings on the craziness that's going on in the voting system right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evidence out there that voting mail-in ballot is susceptible to corruption. Actually, the Carter review, former President Carter, bipartisan review, made it very clear. Voting machines, the Democrats were absolutely adamant in 2018 and 2016 that voting machines could be manipulated, and now they're arguing you can't ever question them.
Yeah.
That makes absolutely no sense. Voter ID. If you don't have voter ID, if you don't control who votes and who doesn't, you have ensured a corrupt system.
Jim, I got a question for you. Yeah, I got a question for you, though, and you can answer it as quickly as you'd like, because we've only got a little under 2 minutes left here. You're attending a lot of high-level Republican committee meetings. You were named the Republican of the Year in Whatcom County for last year, so you're not exactly unknown within the Republican Party on a national level. How much time are these meetings devoting to what I would call the COVID problem?
Not enough. I will say that even in the Republican meetings, okay, they're not really pushing it because everybody has been intimidated and they're afraid. Conservatives are afraid. They're somewhat cowards in pushing back on the media. They're afraid of what the New York Post and the New York Times and the Washington Post will say about
them.
They respond to that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what they're doing, what they have to do is open these processes up so people can look at it and see the truth. And if they see the truth, if they're, you know, and again, it comes right back to the censorship issue. They have to push these things out in order for people to see that they've been deceived, they've been tricked. And again, Washington Post is reporting now that the majority of deaths with COVID are dying from people that are at least double vaccinated.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
Well, I'd like to get those statistics. Jim, we're at 9 minutes and 45 seconds. We've got only 15 seconds to wrap up the show. Let's get those numbers on fatalities and specifically those numbers that you just talked about, and let's talk about them in a daily editorial first part of next week. Ladies and gentlemen, be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.